PM and turn this off. Yes, it is. So I'll call the meeting to order at 5:30 PM. Roll call, please.
President DeLara.
Here.
Vice President Borja.
Here.
Director Matthews.
Here.
Director Rogers.
Here.
Director Perez-Gil, who was unable to join us this evening. Director Zindel.
Here.
And Director Shore.
Here. Who's not here? I'm sorry, I missed that name.
Yvette Perez-Gil, Director Perez-Gil.
Thank you.
Okay, so we will move on to the next item on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance. If we can go ahead and start on three. One, two, three.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Very good. And we will move on to the next item on the agenda. The approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved by Matthews. Seconded by Matthews.
So who made the motion? Okay. Director Zindel makes a motion, seconded by Director Matthews. Those in favor, I'll call the roll. Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zindel?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes. It's unanimous. The next item on the agenda is public comment. At this time, from the audience, anyone from the audience may make a public comment on an item that's not listed on the agenda and is a public interest within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The board has a policy of limiting speakers to no more than 3 minutes. If there's anybody that would like to speak, Andrea, do you have anybody wishing to speak?
If members of the public have any public comments, please use the raise your hand button. And it does not appear that we have any public comment at this time.
Very good. And we will move on to the next item. I'm taking my time just in case anybody stops me from public comments. But the next item on the agenda is the consent agenda, which includes the board minutes, the financials, and the Las Palmas Medical Plaza. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
President DeLara, we do have a correction to the August 25th special meeting of the board minutes. For motion 2095, that passed 6-1. Motion 2096 passed 5-2 with Director Zindel abstaining. And motion 2097 passed 6-1. And that is the only correction.
With that correction noted, is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Yeah. Second, this is Carol.
Okay, so it's a
point of order. Can I ask, Andrea, you did include the correction that we talked about from the July minutes. Is that understood to have been corrected?
That is corrected, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. So we have a motion by Director Shore and a second by Director Rogers. And I will call the roll. Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zindel?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes, yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
And Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes, it passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is number F, Desert Healthcare District CEO report. We have several information items that will be addressed by our CEO, starting with number one, the LAFCO Municipal Services Review. I'll turn it over to our CEO.
Thank you, Madam President. On page 83, it's the first item of the CEO report, and that includes the LAFCO Municipal Services Review. At the January meeting, the district was informed that Riverside Local Agency Formation Commission would be completing this municipal services review for three special districts in the county. And our district was one of the chosen ones. So we have been working with LAFCO's consultant, which is Policy Consulting Associates, to answer all their questions. We have seen a tentative draft of the report. It actually says very good things about our work. It acknowledges the stance of the district in our community, all the contributions we make, and it actually highlights some of the challenges that we discussed frequently about the expansion and how the expansion didn't bring additional resources for our district. And we hope it will raise some attention on that issue. The latest part of the municipal services review included some of the responses that we have done during the COVID-19 outbreak. They included questions about the hospitals and the hospital readiness and capacity to address the crisis and also to sustain their efforts. We worked very closely with the hospital administration, and we provided a comprehensive report on all the work that we as the district have done and what the RMC have done as well. Any questions?
Very good. So there was a report that was supposed to be released today. Is that completed?
That's correct. I don't know if Chris has received any notification of that report being released. I have not heard yet.
I have not heard a status. No.
Very good. Well, I'm sure it'll be positive. Okay, thank you. Okay, the next information item is coordinate.
It's a draft that's being released, not the report, but a draft.
Oh, okay, I misunderstood. It was, thank you for the correction, Director Zendel. And is there any questions from any of the board members on this information item? Questions, comments, questions? Okay, I see no hands, so we'll move on to the next item. Coordination of the healthcare district efforts to ensure community access to COVID-19 testing and healthcare.
Yes, on page 84, I have a summary report of some of the activities that we have undertaken as a response of the COVID-19 outbreak and how the district has been responding to the needs in our community, how we have a variety of organizations that have received funding to address specifically access to healthcare for underserved communities. And one of the critical aspects of this work is that it's very easily fall into silos. And we want to make sure that that doesn't happen, that community organizations are talking to one another, that they are sharing resources, that there were protocols in place that they were all following, and they were having conversations among themselves to avoid stepping on each other's toes and making sure that the community will benefit of this coordinated effort. One of the most challenging pieces has been working or providing services to farm workers. Despite the initial enthusiasm that we saw in some of the growers, especially those that are under the umbrella of the growing Coachella Valley, they found themselves in a challenging situation when legal counsel to some of the growers raised some of the concerns related to confidentiality and HIPAA violations and stigma and potential legal liabilities for growers. Nonetheless, we have been able to support UCR School of Medicine, which is the grantee that it's primarily focused in doing the outreach to this community. And we also coordinated with other community partners, including Borrego Community Health Foundation, to provide the logistics and the support to conduct the tests. And we have also been in conversation with the Department of Public Health to ensure that there is contact tracing that follows each of these activities. So we now have a number of events that have been planned in the community to test farm workers. And the first event is actually this week on Friday. We're going to have a launching event at the AMPM Travel Center in Mecca. And the owner of that travel center actually agreed at the request of our staff and Growing CV to lend the space and to provide coffee and other stuff for the healthcare workers that will be doing the work in that location. Any questions on this report?
Board members, do you have any questions? I see one hand. Director Zendo, your question.
First of all, thank you, Conrado, and congratulations. I think the efforts we're doing reflect well on the district and you personally, and I'm glad we're involved. I just have a couple questions, and perhaps we can have a follow-up report next month. I learned that only PCR tests are being counted by the county in terms of the number of tests being done in a community. And so it would be nice to have a little bit of a narrative, perhaps from the county, how they use this information and is it helpful to them? And do they have any suggestions on how what our role is in this? And secondly, I'd love to hear some, granted they're anecdotes, but I presume somebody who didn't know they were positive tested positive, and then I presume something happened to them in terms of contact tracing and or isolation and or treatment or things like that. So I always think that stories about how us are being involved have actually helped individuals are great. So perhaps at the next meeting or a future meeting, those two items could be addressed so that we have a better idea of our connection with the county testing program and also some anecdotes about the positive effects this is having, which I presume it is.
Yes, absolutely. And to the point of the county only counting the PCR, that is a directive from the state, and the county has requested the state to allow the county to use the data from rapid testing that we're deploying using the ID now to count against their efforts.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from board members on this information item? Okay, no comments? I do have a couple of comments. First of all, I want to say thank you to business owner Chandi for allowing us the site and for making it very accommodating to our needs. So thank you to him. I also want to say thank you to Director Zendo and to our CEO for the recent editorial that you had about testing. I really appreciated you doing that to inform the community about our efforts and what's going on with COVID and testing. And I also want to say thank you to our Director Zendo for a recent meeting that was hosted by our county supervisor when we were provided an opportunity to provide input or ask questions, and the fact that you stress so strongly the need to make sure that that policies that are put into place or pushes to open up that it be done with the safety and the health of the public being number one priority. So I really appreciated you speaking up and for making that a very strong sentiment. So thank you for that. Any other questions before we move on? I don't see any hands up. So we'll move on to the next item. Community Health Needs Assessment and Health Improvement Plan, the timeline update.
Thank you, Madam President. I have provided a brief narrative on this item and a timeline that was provided by HARC. I think that the most important piece to highlight is that we continue to move forward, that we have begun to, or HARC has begun to engage the advisory community council to establish focus groups that there are focus groups that have taken place already, that they have a number of those that are already coordinated and scheduled to take place over the next few days. And we are learning a lot. We also have a draft, it's in a very rough draft of a report and how it's going to be constructed to provide guidance on what are the facts, what's the data that we have available, and how the community is reacting to that data, providing input as it relates to that data. And it's going to be a very informative report. We just need to continue working to ensure that we have broad community participation and that as much as possible, the voice of the community is reflected in that report.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from board members? Yeah, I don't see any hands up. I do have a comment. When I read this report, I did reach out to our CEO to ask about involvement, and I'm going to communicate that to other board members that if you have any thoughts of organizations or people that are not included in any focus group, please reach out to our CEO, because I think it's important that we include as many people as that we think would be helpful to get their input. And it's better to say so now than after the fact, when we can then say, well, why didn't you include so-and-so? So please reach out to our CEO and talk to him about your ideas about who needs to be included that may have been forgotten or maybe is not as involved but has been involved in some other way. But so please contact our CEO and talk to him about it.
Can I
see a hand up, Director Zendel?
You can answer this quickly, Conrado, but has there been an outreach to public officials like city councils? And you know, because obviously they represent a lot of people, some of whom may be involved in all these organizations, but it would be nice for elected officials around the Coachella Valley to have a chance to weigh in on this before we kind of close the book.
Conrado?
I believe that some have been contacted. In school districts, for example, I know that they have been approached. I don't have the list of everybody that has been approached off the top of my head, but I will make sure to discuss it with our contractor.
Yeah, I think the city councils and the mayors ought to have a chance to weigh in, because if they don't and they don't like something later on, they'll say, nobody asked us. So I think it would be good to do it. As Letty brought up, better we do it now than get complaints about it later.
Thank you. Is there any other questions or comments from board members? Okay, then we'll move on to the next item, the Regional Access Project Foundation Emergency Collaborative Update.
This item is also one of the funding opportunities that we made available to the community. It was a partnership with the Regional Access Project Foundation. And there were a number of organizations that benefited from this funding. We actually, the staff put together a very nice report documenting what was the outcome and the impact that this funding has had over their operations. And that report is on our website, because it is 42 pages and we didn't want to add another 42 pages to a board packet that it's pretty extensive. Everybody can go. The link is at the end of this document and it's on our website. You will be able to read the impact that this funding has had in our community.
Are there any questions or comments from board members? Okay, then we'll move on to the next item, Desert Healthcare District 20-year historical grant report. Conrado?
Thank you. This was an item that was requested by the board at the last board meeting. The board wanted to know how much funding and to which organizations we have distributed over the last few years. So the staff has been working on this report and making it available to the public. We have listed the link that it's on our website. And this is a 107-page report, so I believe that it's not practical to include it in this board packet, but the public and the board and anyone can go on our website and read this report. I want to highlight that over the last 20 years, almost $80 million have been distributed in grants in our community, and this is a very significant amount of funding that the community has received from our district.
Thank you. And that is definitely a big amount, and I appreciate all the efforts that the previous boards have taken before me. So thank you. Any board members have any questions or comments on this item? I don't see any hands up, so we'll move on to the next item. Live to Rise Rental Assistance Program updates and enrollment events.
Thank you. Beginning on page 92, you will find a more comprehensive report that Lift to Rise provided to the staff. This is, again, a funding that we have provided to a valuable community partner, that's Lift to Rise, to address the economic instability that our community is facing as a result of the onset of the COVID-19. Today, Lift to Rise has secured about $13 million to support these efforts and distributed about $1 million in emergency cash assistance to more than 4,000 households. Rental assistance is expected to reach about 3,500 households. The Desert Healthcare District staff has also been supporting Lift to Rise in some of the outreach activities. We have a number of drive-ups or drive-through events in which the paperwork that the community members that need this assistance are delivering to Lift to Rise staff and to some of our volunteers. Alejandro primarily has been very useful in volunteering his time to work with Lift to Rise. I believe my turn is this Wednesday. I will be helping as well to collect those documents and reviewing and providing our community members with feedback and directions on which documents they're missing and how to complete this process successfully so that they can receive the funding. I believe Heather Bicona is on the call. If you have any questions, she might be able to answer your questions as well.
In addition to her staff, Taylor Levant Varner and Ruby Olvera.
Yes, good evening. This is Taylor Levant Varner. I am the regional affordable housing planner for Lift to Rise. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm just calling to voice my gratitude for the Desert Healthcare District for its strong support for the United Lift Rental Assistance Program and for your commitment to keeping Coachella Valley families housed amid the pandemic. I want to thank you for investing in the health outcomes of the Coachella Valley families by ensuring that they can remain in their homes. Our emergency response to the pandemic through United Lift has really only reinforced what we knew before, and that is the importance of our long-term work to improve housing stability for all Coachella Valley residents. We have known for a long time that high housing costs and lack of affordable housing are the primary cause of personal struggle for families in the Valley. And we knew also before the pandemic that over 50% of households in the Valley were rent burdened or paying over 30% of their incomes on housing. And that low-income households were disproportionately impacted. And this inequality has only been exacerbated by the pandemic. As a collaborative of local leaders, including many of you on this call and on the board, our housing can has outlined a two-year action plan to reduce the percentage of households who are rent burdened by dramatically increasing the supply of affordable housing. To accomplish this, we've committed to a housing agenda that builds and sustains a pipeline of community valued projects, develops and leverages regional investment, and changes local policies to advance our shared priorities. In addition to my gratitude, I am asking for your continued support as we work to move significant policy and investment levers to dramatically increase the supply of new units of quality of permanently affordable housing in the Coachella Valley. Doing so requires brave leadership like the kind you've already exhibited, and it requires us to disrupt long-held misconceptions about what affordable housing is and what it can be for our communities. And it requires us to reimagine a new future where all families have access to housing they can afford. Once again, thank you so much for allowing me to be here and for your ongoing partnership in this work.
And Ruby Olvera also has a comment. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Ruby, and thank you for allowing me to share my comment. I work with Live to Rise as well, and echoing my colleague's statement, we just want to extend our gratitude for the support that you all have provided for residents during this time. Working directly with residents and hearing their support and really their gratitude for this program to be an option for folks who are trying to keep a roof over their heads and while during this pandemic is really, really essential, all of this work that you all have done to provide support to us. And in addition to that, at our pop-ups, as you all have kind of heard about, where we provide support to residents, we've also been hearing again and again, right, the need for long-term housing solutions for the region. And so that being said, we want to move forward in continuing to provide that long-term intervention and planning that is needed. And we hope to continue to gain your support for this very essential planning that needs to be done to ensure that our residents are supported, not just now, but in the future. We know that if residents are provided the support in the long term, it will help not only them succeed, but our region as a whole. And so we really look forward to continuing that work. We know that what is needed, what was needed before the pandemic and now has not changed much. It's only been exacerbated. And so we want to make sure that we work towards a future that can help keep families healthy, stable, and thriving. Thank you.
And Heather, were you adding anything to top it all off?
Is my microphone on?
It is. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, hooray. Thank you. Yeah, no, I just want to echo the comments that have been made and say thank you, especially to Alejandro, who has spent a ton of time with our staff in the last few weeks. We have 30 pop-up sites. We're finished with two. We've seen between the two pop-up sites last week that over $350,000 was distributed between those two sites. And I think actually when we shared this report, we thought that we would have distributed about $4.5 million by this Friday. I think we'll be at closer to $5.2 million. It's a lot of work to braid together the necessary case management to disperse both the public and private resources. And the healthcare district support has made this possible. And so we just want to say thank you. We're really grateful for your support in this effort. And happy to answer any questions if folks might have any questions.
Lithi, you're on mute. Leticia, you're on mute. Lithi, you're on mute.
Okay, sorry about that. I was singing. No, I'm just kidding. So we have no other public comments. So I'm going to start with Director Rogers to be followed by Vice President Borja.
Thank you. And thank you for the great report and the wonderful work that you're doing to protect our residents from economic crisis and housing. I just wanted to make two comments and I have one question. One comment is on page 95 of the report of the board packet, attachment A, has a list of all the pop-ups that are available in the county upcoming. And if any of you, like me, are on social media, that I post things like that for my area. I know that we have a Facebook neighborhood group where I post that information. We have a next door neighborhood that is people are interested in what these things that are going on in the community. So I know that there's an organization that Les belongs to, Palm Springs First, something like that, that maybe Les might get that information out. And there's a list of documents on Lift to Rise website that tells what documents that people are supposed to bring with them. So, and my question was that the list of documents states that people need to bring evidence that they've been impacted by the COVID-19 crisis. And I was just wondering what that entails, what kind of evidence is needed.
Sure. The easiest way to answer that, Carol, is to say that any type of evidence that you've had an economic impact, whether it's a letter from your employer to say that you're no longer employed and you've lost hours. What we're learning through this is so many folks are living and operating in the informal economy. And so in some cases, we're able to document that folks have a bank statement that show that they were receiving a certain amount of money pre-COVID, and then we're able to show that now they're not able to receive that amount of money. This is actually where the most sort of case management happens on our part. We were, I think, just yesterday able to get approved through the county that we're able to now do an affidavit of COVID impact as well. So that's really the last resort. But there's a million different ways to sort of document folks' impact. It really just, when folks are thinking about this, if they think what paperwork do they have that shows that they've been impacted in some way, we're probably able to make use of it. One thing, if you, Carol, you probably noticed, is that for folks who have increased childcare costs, that counts as well as an economic impact, even if you're still working the same amount of hours. And so in some situations we've found people don't necessarily have agreements with their childcare providers. So again, in that case, any type of receipt of payment pre-COVID and then and during the time of COVID. But that's the place where we try to do the most case management to make sure that folks are able to qualify.
Oh, thank you. So I've noticed that you also mentioned a couple of times that you're accepting volunteers. I'm glad that Alejandro is helping you. Is that something that I could post, that people go to your website and send an email if they want to volunteer? What kind of work do the volunteers do?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have the most engagement with dispersing information about the pop-ups through Facebook, and we're still averaging about a message a minute from both residents and folks in the community being willing to help. But this past week, Director Borja helped at our site over the weekend. Alejandro, really, we are asking that folks help in greeting folks in an initial screening that checks in with folks before we send them indoors to work with a resource coordinator. There's a lot of setup and takedown, and we're really trying to create a warm and friendly environment. So there's things like passing out water and making sure folks have materials. But yeah, we welcome any volunteer support at all. We have another 28 events to go. So anyone can send us a message or contact me directly at heather@liftyourrise.org, and we'll make sure that they're plugged into our events. But thank you for offering, Carol.
Thank you. Vice President Borja?
Just a quick word of gratitude to the Lift to Rise team. It was very hot this weekend and last week, and they were out there answering questions, helping people who were going and coming back with all of their documents. It really is a very impressive setup. It's quick, it's helpful. People should definitely take advantage of the help that is being offered. Heather, can you remind us, or anyone on your team, when the deadline for people to apply to this program is?
Yes, so we have until, thank you, Karen, we have until December to disperse the federal funds. I think that we're gonna be through them. We expect that we'll probably be through them by November, but the fund is open at any time now. So like Director Borja, we encourage folks to apply ASAP while we still have resources on the table. We have been able to continue to fundraise on the side, so we think that we'll be able to hold enough resources to keep the fund open until December. But the sooner the better. And we're encouraging everyone to check in with their friends and neighbors who are renters and get folks to apply as soon as possible.
Thank you. Just immense gratitude to the Lift to Rise team.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from board members? Director Zendel.
Yes, I was wondering if Lift to Rise was able to deal with the overhead cost issue that we discussed a month or two ago. Were you able to get some additional funds from other organizations to cover some of the costs, overhead costs that the county wasn't covering?
Yeah, really great news on two ends there. One, the county actually increased our administrative costs after that meeting. So that was a useful, intense conversation because that actually, I think, helped us in the long run. And yes, other funders have stepped forward to augment sort of the, it's not necessarily just the costs associated with the case management, but also just things like the pop-ups and being nimble and adapting quickly. Other funders have stepped in and supported. And again, the healthcare district's generous support has been incredibly helpful for us. And also to say that the healthcare district's funding specifically for residents has allowed us to make sure that residents can, the residents who might not qualify for public support for rental assistance are able to qualify for rental assistance. So it's been incredibly useful to have a blend and braid of resources.
Any other questions or comments from board members? I'm not
a board member, President Delara, but I just wanted to
call you on you next. I saw your hand, Alejandro.
Okay.
Go ahead, Alejandro.
Yeah. I just wanted to add that in addition to, you know, the resource that, you know, through the rental assistance program, we also have trained the enrollment coordinators there at that are working with Lift to Rise on the CVHIP platform. And we're connecting folks with additional resources like, you know, utility assistance programs, identifying food pantries that are close to their homes. So in addition to the rental assistance information that's being provided to them, we're also, you know, providing additional resources through the CBHIT platform, and all the enrollment counselors, you know, have brochures, and I've given them a quick training on how to utilize the platform, and they're connecting residents to other resources that they might need.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from board members or staff? Okay, very good. And Heather, thank you for making this public-private partnership really effective for our community. And thank you, Conrado, for working with her to make this even a win-win for the district as well, to be participating and also to be able to share resources that we have with the district. We will move on to the next item. Association of California Healthcare Districts Annual Virtual Conference, September 23rd to the 25th. Our CEO.
Thank you. This is just a quick reminder that the conference starts tomorrow. I believe that most of our board members have been registered for this event, and we're beginning tomorrow to participate in the virtual conference of the ACHD. And it will go through Friday.
Questions, comments from board members? See no hands. We'll move on to the next item. Special meeting of the board and communications workshop with Rausch Communications, September 23rd. Conrado?
Again, this is an important meeting we're having tomorrow. It's a special meeting of the board. It's a workshop. It will be dedicated solely to board development activities and how to make our district a really excellent district in terms of how we work together and advance public policies and programs that are responsive to the needs of our community. The meeting will start, I believe, at 5, Andrea, and the board packet was published today.
Any questions or comments? Director Zendel.
Yeah, in the board packet that came out today, there's a whole bunch of policies that are redlined, and they've been approved already, and I just wondered, are we supposed to do something about that?
Well, it's to have a conversation about some of those policies, and it will be useful to trigger some of the conversation that Martin Rauch is preparing to lead us into tomorrow.
Okay, so we're going to look back at some of the past policy decisions we've made in addition to talk about the future. That explains it. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from board members on this topic? I see no hands. We'll move on to the next item. It's California Special Districts Association certification presentation. Chris Plummer, or first our CEO.
Thank you. As you recall, we received a special certification from CSDA, the California Special District Association. And we have Chris Palmer, who's a senior public affairs field coordinator from CSDA, who's coming to give us a presentation on what this means to the district. Chris?
Okay, thank you so much, Conrado. You and Will have just been phenomenal to work for and work with, so I want to thank you. And by the way, I'm glad I went last on the CEO report. Hearing all the stuff you guys are doing is simply amazing. And I just want to say thank you to the board and staff of your district for just the incredible work you're doing. In the words of Governor Newsom, you're meeting the moment. And it's just, you're putting the special in special districts. So thank you all for all the amazing work you're doing. Now, normally I would be doing this presentation at your board meeting, but this is the COVID-19 world we're living in. So tonight I'm wearing my Special District Leadership Foundation hat and here to honor your district on earning the Special District Leadership Foundation District Transparency Certificate of Excellence. A little background on the SDLF. This is the 501c3 nonprofit foundation arm of CSDA, and the SDLF is dedicated to promoting excellence in special districts through recognition programs like this and focus on implementation and governance best practices. So to earn the District Transparency Certificate of Excellence, there are three main subject areas for this program you have to fulfill. The first is basic transparency requirements, which include current ethics training certificates for all the board members, as well as timely filing of the state controller's special district's financial transactions and compensation report. Whew, if that isn't a government report, I don't know what is, but you guys were able to get that filed in time. Second, your website includes posting of your board meetings, your mission statement. You also have your current audit and budget and all the board of directors roster with terms of office in the on the website. So that is very important to let your constituents know you are there and you're accessible. And third, your outreach requirements. You guys have gone above and beyond. I actually get your emails on all the time. And so if I'm getting them, I know your constituents are getting your outreach. And this is amazing, the work that you're doing, communicating with your constituents and the public and letting them know what you're doing. I don't think I need to explain why transparency is important to any of you, but I'm going to anyway. At the end of the day, the district's business is the people's business. And the public has a right to access and to open government. And special districts, regardless of type or size, are public agencies that use public money and provide public services. And at the end of the day, transparency allows for accountability. So On behalf of the board and staff of the Special District Leadership Foundation, it's my honor to present the District Transparency Certificate of Excellence to Desert Healthcare District in recognition of your efforts to promote transparency in the operations and governance of your district. Congratulations to all of you.
Thank you.
I wasn't muted, was I?
No. Thank you, Chris. Any questions or comments from board members? Okay, I think on behalf of the board, we want to thank you for this recognition, and especially thanks to all of our staff for doing this on a day-to-day basis, like you said, for going above and beyond to make sure that we are transparent and accountable to all of our residents. So thank you to our staff, and thank you to the community for always taking an interest in things that we're doing, and it's a pleasure to serve.
Thank you so much.
On to the next item, item G, Desert Regional Medical Center CEO report. Michelle Finley. Michelle?
You're on, Michelle. You can get her to, you have to unmute your phone and we'll be good. She's with us. Michelle, can you hit?
There I can she, sense it, she's with us.
There she is.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, well I was starting off by I'm gonna say I'm gonna make a request that my report be put before Conrado's, because after listening to all of these accomplishments, I'm feeling a little like an underachiever over here as I provide the update of what's going on with the facility, because you have a lot of really fabulous things going on. So congratulations for that. I am going to try to keep this, you know, relatively brief. I'm very pleased to tell you that we have not seen an influx of COVID positives or PUIs post the holiday period. So we're very excited about that. We have actually held in the single digits. You know, with the low number of COVID individuals that are presenting for care, we've been able to return several of our units to what I'll refer to as more of a standard operating model. We were successful in reopening our pediatrics service. So we've been accepting admissions for the last 3 weeks of pediatric care. We are currently staffing the pediatric unit with the Loma Linda University Health System Pediatric Hospitalists, and we had previously announced that affiliation. One of the other things we were able to accomplish was to reestablish our acute rehab unit back in their home department and their home location that took place a couple of weeks ago. So they're really quite excited to be back in their primary unit. Our family medicine program has announced that they are resuming the backpack medicine program. And what this is some of the family medicine residents on an every other Friday basis go out with their backpacks of care to different parks and different churches and to those that are in need of assistance. Another item I'm happy to tell you about is we did welcome a new assistant chief nursing officer. Her name is Kathleen Moore. She comes to us from Phoenix with over 20 years of nursing experience and nursing leadership experience. Her background is mostly in the ICU, ED, and pediatrics area. And her primary focus is going to be working and partnering with our chief quality officer and our chief safety officer on clinical practice and protocols and advancing the overall practice of nursing care within the institution. I'm sure as all of you read, the county has moved us from a tier 1 to a tier 2, so we will watch closely how how our numbers trend. We will be sometime in the next week or so reevaluating some of our visitor restrictions that we have in place, but we'd like to get a little bit better feel for how going to Tier 2 will impact us, and we'd like to get a little bit better feel as we're tracking what's going on in some of the countries that experience the flu season a little earlier than we tend to. The other item that I did want to update you on is we've been proceeding a little bit ahead of schedule. When we opened the new fast track express care area of the emergency room department, I had told you all that we were going to work to refurbish the rest of the emergency room to, you know, new paint, new flooring, laminates, to have a common look within the unit. We're on phase four, and we have one more phase to go through, because clearly we can't take a large portion of the emergency room down for refurbishment at any given time. So these things end up going over several months and being heavily phased. So we are looking to complete that about the middle to the third week of October. You know, operationally, we've turned our attention to the flu season. You know, we have had representatives of the facility that have done a number of interviews and news articles, because we are heavily advocating, and it is strongly recommended that all individuals that are appropriate to have the flu vaccine actually take the flu vaccine. I mean, we are going to be vaccinating all of the hospital employees as well as the medical staff starting October 5th, and we will be doing so throughout the month of October. Generally, in a hospital, you get a very high rate of individuals that agree to be vaccinated, but historically across the U.S., only about 45% of those eligible adults actually do move forward and take the vaccination, which is why we have really felt a need to partner with the county and partner with other healthcare facilities and partner with a number of individuals to get the message out that it is extremely important that people be vaccinated for the flu this year. Our doctors have been monitoring very diligently what's going on in other countries, as I had mentioned, that have a tendency to see the flu a little bit earlier than we do. And so far, the news that's been coming back has been fairly encouraging in those countries that are heavily vaccinating and are maintaining their social distancing, hand washing, and masking, because we all need to come together and make sure that we are avoiding what is being referred to as the twindemic, and that's what I refer to as when COVID meets the flu. Part of our preparations for the flu season is we do recognize that the symptoms of both can be very similar, so we are preparing to test both flu and COVID, and we are preparing to be able to do the isolation that is appropriate given the outcome of that testing. So we feel very well prepared, mainly because of the peaks we went through with COVID. We feel very well prepared with our PPE stockpiles. We've been making sure that we have appropriate drug stocks, appropriate testing supplies, appropriate staff to be able to manage our way through the November, December, and however the flu season may progress. So, I mean, with that, if any of you have questions for me, I'm afraid I am on audio, I am not on Zoom, so I will listen patiently.
Okay, any questions from board members, questions or comments? If you can raise your hand, please. I have a question from Director Rogers. Director Rogers?
Thank you. Hello, Michelle.
Hi
there. At one point in time, the hospital was part of a study doing the COVID plasma administration, and then there were some CDC guidelines that came out that were conflicting. I wonder where you are on that.
Convalescent plasma, or are you referring to remdesivir?
COVID plasma.
We're still participating in both the convalescent plasma, and we are still participating with remdesivir, although some of the study protocols have been cleared by CDC. So the data that we're abstracting and presenting has been modified from the initial studies. But we are, I have not seen the data actually abstracted and submitted back. But we do, based off of the accumulation of the data, we do receive protocol updates, and then we do adopt those protocol updates. So I would tell you we are still participating, and we are current in our protocols and practices. And we're still encouraging people to give blood for the convalescent plasma.
Director Rogers?
And we actually just participated in a blood drive that's taking place over at the Hansen House in honor of Dr. Urquhart.
Thank you. Great. Director Rogers?
Thank you. One more question. Recently, I saw an informational item that you sent us that showed the four tiers of from the county of Riverside, move into normalcy. And I wonder if you wouldn't mind if I share that with the other board members.
Not at all. Please go ahead and share, and you'll see that we have moved from the purple tier one widespread to the tier two substantial category. Right. And that was the news today.
Right. And I shared that with along with a press release from the city of Palm Springs that goes into more detail of what's allowed.
If you go to the website, you will see that you can drill down to the different services and different retails, and you will get like schools. You'll get a lot of detailed information as to what the requirements and the parameters are within each of your specific industries or areas of interest, and what's in what is the protocols to be followed, as well as what can be, you know, what can be accommodated. But feel free to share it.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from board members? Yeah, I don't see any. Well, thank you, Michelle, for your report.
Okay. Thank you.
We have a public comment.
Oh, we have a public comments. Don't go yet, Andrea.
Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, good evening. You hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, just on the tiered system, I want to relay a 9:30 to 4:30 board meeting today where literally about 100 people showed up to testify about completely reopening the economy on an item presented by Supervisor Hewitt. Luckily, that was continued today, but I want to make it clear that this is going to be coming back. Supervisor Perez believes in this tiered structure, that we do this in a safe and measured manner. And I want to applaud Les as well for being an advocate of that as well. But just to keep your eye on the future board meetings, right now we think it's coming back on October 6th. I lack words of what I heard today, but I just wanted to make you aware of that. So thank you.
Thank you, Greg. I think that's very important that if we have an opportunity to provide input, that we speak up, because the more voices in opposition to what was heard today would probably be very helpful. I know our supervisor is very concerned about making sure that we do not take any steps backwards, but that we continue to be very cautious in moving forward. Okay, so we have no other questions or
comments. And I feel like I'm on the receiving end of the success of that venture.
Yes, you are.
Because we certainly can tell at the facilities when people are well behaved and following guidance, and when they are not.
Yes, we definitely want to take care of our healthcare workers, our first responders. We have a responsibility to them. Thank you. We'll move on to the next item, Desert Regional Medical Center Governing Board of Directors Report. Director Zendel.
Actually, Director Rogers is going to give the report this week.
Thank you, Director Rogers. Thank you. We had a very interesting meeting. Standard agenda items where we listen to standing reports, quality reports, financial reports, report from the medical staff. One exciting item that I was really happy about was that we approved Dr. Levinson's credentials to come back to the Desert Regional Medical Staff as a psychiatrist for telemedicine. So that's going to add one more person to add to our mental health bucket. So I think I told you that I'm sharing the four tiers that were put out by Riverside County that Michelle shared with us. And also I'm included the news release from the City of Palm Springs that gives a more detailed list of what's allowed with our new tiers. So did I pretty much cover that, Les?
Yes, absolutely.
Any questions or comments from other board members on this report? Okay. Oh, Director Shore.
I just have a point of information. Neither in Michelle's report or in the director's report are there any reports of financial information, financial operation, activity, et cetera. Is that structured in a way that I'm not familiar with, or is it an omission?
Well, because they are a private for-profit corporation, their proceedings are not public. And Dr. Zendel and I have sworn our oath of confidentiality. If you want to look at Desert Regional Hospital, any hospital's financials, that they do make their reports public on the California Department of Public Health website.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to understand the protocol. Thank you very much.
Let me just assure you that Carol and I ask a lot of questions when the report is presented, including, for example, and I think I can say this, Desert Regional and Eisenhower got substantial care funds related to COVID, which did affect the bottom line. And so we asked questions about that and are aware of that and things like that. So as the two representatives of the district, we are privy to that information and we ask questions and bring concerns as a member of the governing board of the hospital to the leadership of the hospital as appropriate.
Yeah, but I guess I'm asking the question from the logic of a worst case position. And this is obviously purely, purely hypothetical. What if the hospital should suffer a severe economic catastrophic event? Does that something that would ultimately become known to us through the normal channels or only through the public mechanisms? I mean, because in the final analysis, we're still the owners of that property. And the premises that what I'm describing is a theoretical catastrophe. Well, what if that
I'm going to turn to Jeff Scott, because those things are laid out in the contract we have with Tenet, and I'm sure they're addressed, but I don't know the details, and I don't want to know the details, but Jeff certainly does.
Well, part of the our lease with Tenet is it to do what Michelle's doing right now, is to keep you informed as to what's going on. So I think to the extent it would be very difficult to hide a catastrophic loss or something like that. I mean, that's why she's providing us these updates to keep us informed. But we're not getting monthly financials at this point. So,
okay. I'm just curious to appreciate the background, but thank you.
Yeah, and she also provides us an annual report, too. which describes what, you know, what's happened and where they're at during the year.
Very good. Thank you. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the program committee. And in absence of Director Perez's Gil being the chair, I'm going to turn to Vice President Borja on the items going down. Well, first of all, do you have anything to say at this time about any of these topics, or do you want to just lead us through this?
Sure, there's only, actually no, that's in the foundation packet. No, I'm gonna turn it over to Donna or Conrado.
Okay, very good. Then the draft of the minutes, information item, Conrado.
Yes, thank you. I will defer to Donna who manages this.
No, I'm just kidding. So the minutes are in your packet for information. If you have any questions or comments, or we happy to answer any of them.
Questions or comments from board members? Seeing none.
Okay.
Funding requests.
Next item is funding requests that lists the requests and LOIs that have come in. The status of some of them. Some of them we've already had some proposal conferences with, so they're in the process of doing an application. And we've gotten some more LOIs in, but they will be on the next program committee report. So if there's any questions.
Okay, questions, comments from board members? I do have a comment. I was kind of surprised to see so many LOIs withdrawn. Do you have a general reason for what that is attributed to?
Yes, and you know, at the very beginning of it, in the red, that we did withdraw some because they were on hold because this was all pre-COVID. And so many of these organizations are closed. They're not seeing their constituents or clients. And so the organizations agreed to withdraw because it was not relevant anymore to how what they were asking for in a request.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Seeing no questions or comments from board members, we'll move to the next item, progress and final report. Donna?
Okay, and again, this is a list of one progress report from Healthy Families. We included in some of the impact that COVID had had during this grant process. And then we do have some final reports that are listed. We always like to show the five things to be done differently if they were to implement the service again. And we kind of hold that to them. If we do have another pre-proposal conference, say, well, you said you were going to do this, but... So it's always interesting to see what they would do differently if they had funding again.
Okay. Any questions or comments from board members on that item? Seeing none, we'll move to the next one, grants payment schedule.
And that's just there to show you the grants that have been approved by the board beginning this fiscal year.
And any questions? I'm sorry. Questions or comments from board members on grants payment schedule? None.
Things that the program committee asked at for the grants payment schedule is if Chris could add at the bottom how much funding was left to those five areas that we voted on last time. So in the next board meeting, you all should see some of those numbers reflected, how much we've spent on a particular line item for our different strategies just for this gap year.
Right, and Chris was kind enough, he has since then created a report that lists the five program areas, but then he will be also deleting or say subtracting what grants came out under what focus area.
Okay, I saw a hand up from Director Rogers.
Thank you. Director Borja already asked that question for me. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Okay, the next one is consideration to approve grants 1139, Cal State University San Bernardino Palm Desert Campus Street Medicine Program for $50,000. This is an action item, Donna.
Yes, this is a grant request that came through the program committee. The program committee approved to move recommendation to the board for approval as is. It's a one-year project for the nursing students and to go out with the different organizations that you can see they have partnerships with to do street medicine. They're also learning, it's a curriculum for public health nursing as well. They're learning about a different population, a vulnerable population. So they're learning a lot from their working with the different partners. Diane Vines and Matthew Durkin are on the phone if anybody has any questions for this grant. Otherwise, the program committee, like I said, has recommended approval as is for $50,000, asking the board to approve it.
I see a hand up for Director Shore. Director Shore.
How many nurses participate in this? Oh, here it is. Four nursing students. Thank you.
Per quarter. So I think it's a total of 32. Am I correct, Diane?
That's correct. It's a total of 32.
Thank you.
Director Zendel?
Yes, I move we accept the proposal.
I second. Is there a second? Okay, Vice President Borja has seconded. Is there any public comment, Andrea?
Yes, there is. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, thank you, Andrea. I encourage the support of this project. I've had the pleasure of being on some of these calls and just want to let the district know that working as part of the CV Heart Collaborative is, you know, engaging street medicine. And I'm really excited to be working with Diane and all the partners in this. So I think it's a great allocation of resources for this.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment, Andrea?
No, but Carol has her hand raised.
I see her hand. Director okay. Rogers.
Thank you. I've had the pleasure of working with the student nurses and Dr. Vines at some of the homeless shelters and the cooling centers. And I just wholeheartedly think it's a wonderful effort that we should support. I created a sign that we put up that said, pain-free flu shots given here, which I thought was pretty creative. So I support this proposal.
Director Rogers, I'm sorry, Director Zendel.
Yeah, I just want to add that both Eisenhower and Desert Regional send their residents, their physicians in training to the street medicine programs. There's one on the east side, mostly run through volunteers in medicine, and then this one mostly on the west side. But it's so important for physicians in training, as well as nurses in training, to experience the real differences that medicine is for people who are living on the street. So I fully support this.
Very good. Is there any other questions or comments from board members on this item? We have a motion on the floor. We'll call the roll call. We have Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zendel?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And myself, yes. It passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is the Finance, Legal, Administration, and Real Estate Committee. I'll turn it over to our committee chair, Director Matthews.
You'll see on your agenda the draft meeting, the minutes rather, of the September 8th meeting and the Retirement Protection Program. I draw your attention to the September 8th meeting on pages 151 and 152, because the third item is a Strategies 360 consulting service agreement, which we're going to go to next, and I'm going to let Conrado explain. But at that meeting, it was denied by the committee 2-1, with Director Shore and Director Matthews voting no, and Director Dallara voting yes. With that said, those are the two items. So if we go to 173 and 187. Well,
before we go there, I want to give an opportunity for any board members to have any questions or comments on the minutes or the Retirement Protection Plan. Any hands, questions, comments? None? Okay, we'll move on to the third item. You have the floor then.
Yeah, the third item I think Conrado ought to handle, because it's his, and we voted against it, two of us.
Yes.
So I'll give you a shot at the board, Conrado. Thank you.
All right, thank you. At the last board meeting, the staff was directed to bring a proposal to the board for consideration regarding a border education project. We had literally 2 weeks to identify a viable proposal that could be brought to the district and to provide an opportunity for this discussion on this valuable project. And during this time of a pandemic, it is so critical to number one, engage our voters in educating them about the healthcare district, the value that we provide to the community, and also that it's important to vote safely. So we identified Strategies 360. There is a variety of reasons why we didn't have time to do a request for proposal. As I said, it was only 2 weeks. We tried to identify a partner that was not involved in local politics that could be involved with any of the local elections and to keep this project as neutral as we can and to deliver the information that our voters need to engage safely in participating in our democracy. So you find the proposal from pages 174 onward, and you have the resumes of the partners that will be working on this project, and we have one of the representatives from Strategies 360 who can address the questions from the board, and with that, I will leave it to the board to engage.
I'll start off with questions from the board and then open public comments and then come back to the board. Is there any questions or comments from the board members? I see a hand from Director Rogers to be followed by Vice President Borja.
Thank you. I think that this is a very important process, not only just for Zone 3, but I see it as an opportunity to raise awareness, as it does. For the benefit of the community throughout the valley. So I would be in support.
Vice President Borja.
So I've taken the time to do a little bit of research and I have a couple of different comments to share with my board colleagues, especially in taking into consideration what I read from the Finance Committee meetings minutes. My first comment is that we are the health entity. We are a very important health entity in the Valley. We are a very responsible authority, and we can become a very responsible authority about voting safely. We have been working towards less virus contamination in our community. We have an opportunity to support people in a different way to lower the risk of COVID infections in our community. I say this because in Coachella, and in Indio, and in many other parts of this valley, after 8 p.m. on a election night, there are still lines of people waiting to vote, which means that we can probably expect the same kind of turnout, especially in a presidential election, the day of the election. There will be people out trying to submit their ballot in person. If we can mitigate some of that with $30,000, I think it's a well worth investment. Again, those $30,000 would only be 10% of what we would have spent on the election in general. And as was said earlier, right, the district's business is the people's business. We use public money to provide public services. We were going to use these funds to do some type of electoral engagement. It was going to look like the ballot. Now it's going to look like information. I think it's a very good investment on our part. In the past year, while I've been part of the program committee, we have received very few, and I remember almost none, grant applications from nonprofits in this area in Zone 3. I'll remind you that Zone 3 is La Quinta, Indian Wells, Rancho Mirage, and like a sliver of Palm Springs. We are a government entity in charge of people's tax dollars. The least we could do in this election is use some of those funds to inform residents how to vote safely, who we are, why they should be involved in the politics and the know of the Desert Healthcare District, which hosts some of their fund, some of their tax dollars. In the last district election, which was actually our first, in 2018, in Zone D, because we were voting by zone letters in 2018, exactly 50% of registered voters turned out to vote out of 15,000 voters, which means there are still many more people in our region who should probably know about us and should probably care about us beyond seeing us on Facebook, beyond like seeing us on the news. Like, there should be more civic participation, and I think we can do this through this, this proposal that we have in front of us. And the last thing I will say is that I appreciated them adding their timeline. I think the only day when it's too late for a voter, for voter education, is November 4th, the day after the election, once it's already happened. There are candidates who had their websites telling voters to vote November 15th, 2020, literally 2 weeks after the election, right? So we really do have a good opportunity to be good stewards of not just funds, but also of like civic participation in the district, of information that goes off, out to our community members, and of more engagement in the work and in the business of the district. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Zendel.
So I have comments, not questions. Do you want me to hold them or do them now since people are reading?
Hold up all your comments so we can come afterwards when we do the wrap up. Questions, Director Shore, did you hesitate? Did you decide to put your hand back down? No, okay.
I never put my hand up.
Okay. Okay, Andrea, do we have any public comments?
Yes, we do, from Heather Vicona.
Okay, Heather, you're on, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great, sorry, I'm not great at Zoom. I just wanted to echo support for this item. I think one thing that many folks on the phone probably saw last night were comments that were made in the city of Palm Springs about a permanent supportive housing project. And I think one thing that we're seeing in the emergency response work that we're doing now is really the tangible sense of disconnect between issues that are on the ballot, issues that our local city council members and other folks are making decisions on across our municipalities, and how these impact our lives, not just in COVID, but long-term. And really echoing the comments that Director Borja made, I think that there's, we see this just with the emergency response that we're trying to provide, that folks have a real sense of confusion about how to access resources or fill out paperwork. And I think there's a general sense of fear about getting out right now. And it's really, really important that organizations like the Desert Healthcare District and any organizations that have a focus on engaging the public are supporting folks to be civically engaged. And from our perspective, the many critical things that are on the ballot this year from a federal to local level really require residents to get out and vote at a level that that we haven't seen in a long time. And we're in the midst of the pandemic. So I would really support this use of resources. I think it's really important. And I think it will support the work that we all get to do together.
Thank you, Heather. Is there any other public comment, Andrea?
There are not any other, no.
I will turn it over to Director Zendel, starting with him.
So first of all, I want to clarify the first sentence in the background, because I think it's important for our process. At the August 24th meeting, 25th meeting, the board didn't recommend that we use the money. It recommended that today we discuss using the money. And that's the way it works. If any board member wants to discuss, wants to put something on the agenda, he or she can ask for a consensus of the board to put it on the agenda, and that's what happened last time, but no decision was made to do that. And I think everybody understands that, but that first sentence caught me off guard. I'm very uncomfortable with doing something like this around the election, especially around the election of a district director from a zone, especially only doing it for one zone. I think although I realize that we're not advocating for one candidate or the other, I just am uncomfortable with it. I understand the desire to educate the public about what the healthcare district does. And by the way, I think Will Dean and Conrado and the staff over the past year have really upped the game of educating the public about what we do. Is there more that we can do? Sure. Do we want to look into doing more stuff? Absolutely. But I don't think it should be done around the election. And to do a mailing and or to engage digital and social media in the weeks around an election, I mean, have you seen already the mailboxes are filled with flyers? It's just going to get lost, and it'll get lost in social media. And again, I think it's important that we educate the entire district about what we do and encourage them to give us their feedback about what we do and make recommendations. But I don't understand it being done around the election. I don't think we'll get any bang for the buck. And I think we can use the $30,000 in a better way. Thank you.
Okay, Director Shore.
I'm not going to suggest what I'm suggesting as a formal motion. What I'm going to say next is something I like to throw out for consideration by the board. On the one hand, Karen is correct that education is a good thing, and it can, you know, you can never have too much education. On the other hand, less is right, and I agree completely with Les about the timing issues and the impact, etc. Maybe the middle ground, and this is what I'd like to just throw out for my colleagues' consideration, would be to sponsor a town hall meeting where Conrado and staff, Alejandro and others, can be available in a Zoom-like setting to make a brief presentation about process and then open it up for members of the community to call in, speak to them, ask questions, and get a little bit of the issue of education in front of the people who are motivated to do so, and yet do it in a practical way. Because I do not support this. As the voting record demonstrates, I did not support the recommendation. But if we can achieve some kind of effect through a town hall meeting with, you know, through our executive, I would support that.
Any other comments or questions from board members?
I'm sorry, that was just a comment for discussion.
Okay, very good. Questions on this agenda item? Okay, so I have a comment. I was concerned about also the timing. There was other concerns that I had early on, but they were addressed by Conrado in his report that he followed up on some of the things that we talked about at the committee. But the timing was an issue, and that's why I asked that the consultant put together the timeline. So that's what I was paying attention to when I looked at this report, to see, again, is it a good use of fund, and is it effective? Is it being fiscally responsible to do this? And so who's going to do it? Are they able to do it? And how are they going to do it? I think those questions have been addressed to my satisfaction. I think that if there's anybody that has the opportunity to learn from this, it's a vote, and maybe they'll get more interested in taking part of our electoral process. I'm going to support this, even though I would have preferred that we had a little bit more time to do this. But I think that it's important that we do come out with the opportunity for people to learn about it. And maybe next time around, we do it in a lot more advanced time frame to be even more effective. But this will be something to show us to start and then to improve on it and years forward. So I'm going to support it. And I have a question or a comment from Director Rogers with her hand up. Director Rogers.
Director I would like Rogers. To make a motion to approve the consultant. Can you hear me?
Yes, there's a motion. Is there a second? Can you complete your motion was to support the item? Is that correct?
Yes, consideration to approve the consulting services agreement for Strategies 360 for voter education, not only in Zone 3, but for entire Coachella Valley for the district's board of directors November 2020 election.
A point of order, that's not a proposal.
No, that's different than what is the consulting agreement. I don't know if they can actually, Conrado, what are your thoughts on that? Is that possible?
Not is that realistic? This proposal, because the funding is limited to the number of recipients of this campaign. I think that if we want to have a conversation about a larger engagement, that will require more time and more resources.
Which is limited as it is, so I don't think that's realistic that we could actually.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, my motion would be then as it is with staff.
Is there a second?
I will second Director Rogers' motion.
Okay, so there's first and a second. I'll call for the vote. Okay, Director Shore?
No.
Director Zendel?
No.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
No.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I will vote yes. What happens in a tie?
It doesn't pass.
It doesn't, it goes down, okay. Thank you, Jeff. Okay, so that is not moving forward.
I have a question. We have one board member that is missing. Is that something that could be brought tomorrow at the special meeting?
It's not on the posted agenda, and there's you'd have to call a special meeting.
It isn't qualified to be an emergency item because it's not about timing. It's not anything new.
Yeah,
so it doesn't qualify for an emergency item. So moving on to old business, we have the 2020 census Coachella Valley update, September 30th count end date. Our CEO.
The Coachella Valley update on the 2020 census, Donna, would you lead this, please?
Yes. Barrett Newkirk from Alianza, that represents the Coachella Valley table for the census, is on. I believe he's going to give an update. And I believe I spoke with Maria Lemus from Visione Compromiso, just kind of give a quick update on a little mini grant that you approved last month. And she is going to also speak on what they've been doing so far as well. So, Barrett, I don't know if you want to go first.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to. Thank you all for having me. It's nice to be talking with you. So at Alianza, we and our census partners began planning over a year ago on a get out the count effort that would primarily target the hardest to count parts of the Coachella Valley. We worked with many different organizations, but there were many others that were working to promote the census, other nonprofits, civic organizations, and government entities that were maybe affiliated with our campaign, but I can't speak to all of the census outreach that happened in our area over the past several months. But I can give you a quick update on sort of where the numbers look and then try to answer any questions that you may have. So right now, with just about a week left for the official census count, Riverside County as a whole has beaten its 2010 self-response rate, as have a few cities in the Coachella Valley and some census tracts in unincorporated areas. As of late last week, other cities were very close to reaching their 2010 response rate. And by now or by the end of the month, they very well may have. Other areas of the valley have not reached the same level of response as 2010, which I see as due to the many challenges that we've experienced with this particular census. So these response rates, which are just one way to look at the effectiveness of the count, do not include the additional enumeration that's happening from census field workers that began in August. We don't know exactly how much those numbers will add to the official count, but the Census Bureau estimates that between the self-response and its own field work, it's accounted for more than 97% of the state. So certainly there were many factors that made the 2020 census push extra challenging, especially in the hardest to count areas. We regularly encountered fears about handing over personal information to the government and questions about citizenship and immigration. Then the COVID pandemic and even the racial justice movement that grew over the summer caused us to adjust our approach and meant that there were many other issues taking up people's mind that I think detracted from the message about the census. So with the pandemic, there was an extension to the response rate, which was greatly needed, but then it was sort of quickly shortened again. So instead of the end of August, the final response time is now the end of September. It's hard to know what effect that lost month will have on the final count, but certainly we would have liked to have more time to ensure as accurate a count as possible. But still, despite all those challenges and confusion at times, we're very pleased that we've been able to promote the census here in our area and believe that the count was a success. So again, I'd love to try and answer any questions that anyone might have.
Okay, thank you, Barrett. Is there any questions or comments from board members at this time? Yeah, I don't see any hands going up. Andrea, even though this is an information item, do you have any hands going up?
There is a hand that's up, and I'm not sure. I asked them in the chat box. They don't have a name. They used a link. I don't know what they're going to speak on, but you have the floor, the person with your hand raised.
Okay, Maria Limas. Maria Limas?
Great.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. This is Maria Lemos, Executive Director of Visión y Compromiso, and thank you so much for giving us a few minutes to just update you on some of the work that we've been doing. We were funded for...
Are you here in the parking lot?
We were funded to provide outreach and engage hard-to-reach Latinos in the Coachella Valley to on census and really to activate their awareness about the census. We have two to three promotoras who've been working on the project. They have been implementing webinars and workshops and Facebook Lives and Zoom information out to the community since the project began. It's a very rich outreach that they're doing. They're reaching a lot of community members through those techniques. We're also doing door-to-door canvassing. Of course, we wear all the protection. We have the mask and the gloves and a lot of protection. And that really seems to be very valuable because people get to see that there are others who are interested and they're able to talk to somebody. We've been doing a lot of call banking and really talking to people and expressing to them the importance of the census. And just last week on Friday, we had a census caravan. It was very successful. There were 37 cars that were involved in the caravan and they went from town to town, really highlighting with, they had banners on the sides, they had honking, they had all kinds of things on their car. It was just an amazing thing. And I hope you go to our Facebook in Coachella to look at it. It really brought a lot of attention to the importance of census, but the community members, the residents there really wanted to encourage them to participate and that it was something that was not unusual for them to do. And we are continuing our efforts for the next couple of weeks. We know that we've received a lot of response In the caravan alone, we've received nearly 600 responses for additional information, and we know that we're following up with them. We're also providing some video information as well as handouts and flyers that we develop for them. So we're really encouraged by the turnout. We have had a longstanding committee in Coachella for a very long time. And in partnership with them, they're taking the word out and really supporting that's important to be part of the census. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Maria. Do we have any questions or comments from our board members?
I do have a question.
Vice President Borja?
Could either of you inform us what the count is looking like around the Coachella Valley for unsheltered individuals?
For what kind of individuals?
People who don't have homes.
Oh, okay, homeless, thank you. I didn't hear the word.
I can't, but it's an interesting question that you ask, because we've been doing some research and some asking in our other comités across California. And if you think about it, in the Latino community, there's really no word for homeless. That is, there are, and so we're trying to redefine what homeless is in the Latino community so we can get a better understanding of who are without actual homes at the moment, or how many are living in a household, and how can we look at redefining what homeless is.
And Greg may be able to provide some feedback. Go ahead, Greg.
Yes, I can. Thank you. I've actually been asking this question for months, and thank you, Director Borja, for bringing it up. And the county actually has implemented a pretty aggressive program to, one, it's a direct shelter count on a couple number of given days, so those that are in our shelter systems throughout the county. And then additionally, our outreach workers, whether that is through the county, whether it's through our service providers such as CVRM, Martha's, our public safety agencies, have been talking about census, doing the census, out in encampments and stuff. So to your point, Director Borja, we are focused on that. And I'm literally asking that question every week up until these last few days.
Thank you so much, Greg.
If I could just add to that, I think that it's important to consider my previous statement, which is how do we redefine homelessness? And I'm sure there are many in the Latino community who are homeless because they're living with other people or they're living in places that we're not able to access yet. So I think if we get some information, I'd love to contribute to that discussion.
Yeah, and Maria, that's a great point. And I know that we have instructed a lot of our outreach workers, especially within the Eastern Coachella Valley, to really emphasize the need for people to count everyone that is residing in your home, whether they are on the mortgage or the lease or not. So we are addressing that, but you bring up a great point. And in my role in the collaborative on homelessness, we are looking at not only homelessness, not only within the Latino population, but also how do we address more of the homelessness that falls outside of the HUD recommendations. So the McKinney-Vento, school data homeless as well. So it's a great point.
Precariously housed.
Director, Vice President Borja, any other questions or follow-up?
No more questions or follow-up, but thank you both.
Any other board member questions or comments? Okay, I just want to say thank you to Maria and also Barrett and your organizations for doing the work of trying to reach as many hard to reach, which is a difficult task as it is, hence the name. But having to do that in such a different climate and a difficult climate of the anti-immigration policies and the COVID environment. So I applaud the work that you've done to get us where we're at, and I appreciate all the work that your staff has done.
Thank you.
So we will move on to the next item, which is update on the district's history book. Conrado.
Yes, I will provide the update.
Hello, directors. Thank you, Conrado.
So you may recall that at the board meeting in July, I reported that we had received a first draft from our writer, Mr. Jeff Kreider. That draft was reviewed by our committee who provided feedback, and Mr. Kreider actually took that. He interviewed individual additional sources for the book. He revised the structure of the book, and now we have a second draft, which is being reviewed by the committee. I have received some of the feedback. Once I have it all, I will compile notes, including my own, to submit to the writer, and we will discuss that and make the changes. That said, we are on track to have a completed book in early 2021, which I'm excited about. And I'm happy to answer any questions about the book, about the process.
Thank you. I have a hand up from Director Zendel.
Yeah, what is the cost per book going to be? And is it a low enough number that we could consider making many, many copies available to people in the community to help spread the word of the history of the district?
That's a really great question, Les. The scope of the book has changed a bit. It's actually a slightly bigger book than we initially anticipated. But the cost for us is in terms of the writing and putting together remains the same. We do not have a cost yet per book, but I will say part of the initial plan was to have the book formatted in a way that we could actually post it on our website. So anyone who could go on the website and actually read it, as well as have a printed copy of it.
And then possibly as a sort of a follow-up, could parts of it be extracted into a small pamphlet that could be, for example, mailed to the constituents around in the district as part of an education program about what the district is?
Absolutely. I am envisioning this as a really great resource for the district in terms of educating the community about what the district does. We have our annual report coming up. I could see taking excerpts from the book for that, just all kinds of things it can be used for.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from board members? I see no hands up, so we'll move on to the next item, Coachella Valley Association of Governments CV Link Quarterly Progress Report. Conrado?
All right. On page 188, you will find the report that was provided by CVAC regarding the CiviLink. And I believe there is at least one member of CVAC staff that it's on the call that can answer any questions the board may have on this report.
Go ahead, Erica, you're on.
Hi, thank you very much, board members. And Conrado, thank you for the introduction. My name is Erica Felci. I think all of you know me. I'm with the Coachella Valley Association of Governments. Our quarterly report is presented to you. As you know, we try to recap all the work that we're doing. And frankly, the last couple of months have been so exciting that we wanted to come in person or via Zoom, as in person as we can be, and give you the latest information. As I think I've mentioned to you before, our goal is to get nearly 20 miles of the project underway in 2020, which is more than we had thought we would reach at the beginning of this year, but our right-of-way has progressed in great strides, so we're very excited about that. If you've been along Monterey Avenue in Palm Desert lately, you may have seen the construction that's occurring near College of the Desert. A lot of the CV Link route in Palm Desert is on street, so the city will soon be home to the Coachella Valley's first cycle track design, which allows for two-way bike and ped travel on one side of the road. Our construction signs, which just went up, I saw them on my way home today, will identify the district as our funding partner on that segment. I'd also invite you to tune in to what I expect will be a milestone moment on October 19th, where we will have a joint meeting of CVAG's Executive Committee and Transportation Committee. As your quarterly update notes, we went out to bid this summer for the rest of our 2020 plans. We got 6 bids. 4 of them were extremely close, and we've been working with Caltrans to review them. The joint meeting will be an opportunity to present a recommendation and award for a contract for the work that will occur in Palm Springs, Palm Desert, La Quinta, Indio, and Coachella. The meeting starts at 4:30 p.m. We're going to be sending you Zoom information if you want to tune in, but our executive director, Tom Kirk, wanted me to come tonight and extend a personal invitation because this project would not be possible without your continued support. And I think we all know that during these COVID times, it's really clear how important walking and biking is to leading a healthy lifestyle. We've seen individuals and families out on the segments of CV Link that are already constructed, and we're very anxious and excited to get more miles underway. I'm happy to address any questions, and thank you again for your partnership.
Are there any questions or comments from board members? If you could please raise your hand. I see no hands going up. Thank you, Erica, for your report. Oh, I spoke too soon. Director Shore. Please unmute.
Excuse me. I'm looking at page 190 where it discusses an item 5, funding, and we are listed for $10 million. Now, it's my understanding that that's a commitment, not a funded commitment. Is that true, Conrado? Didn't we partially comply with that, or have we expended $10 million?
We have not spent $10 million. It's a commitment to fund up to $10 million.
Right. And so therefore, I think, you know, with all due respect to the leadership of CVAG, that's a mischaracterization of the economics, and that should be revised to indicate it committed commitments for funding, not funding, because it misrepresents at least us.
Director Shore, thank you for your feedback. These are our funding commitments, as you pointed out, for the project. We do draw down our funds on a reimbursable basis, as you hopefully will turn in on October 19th. I expect the next couple of years to draw down many of these funding sources. You may recall from the grant that was approved by the district in December, we do have a annual reimbursement cap, and we have we submitted our first reimbursement. The district did provide that, and we will continue to follow the reimbursement payment schedule in the grant.
I don't in any way disagree with what you just said. I'm merely suggesting that the language of item 5 on page 190 is misleading. I think you need to add language that reads CVAG has received committed funding, not funding, because we have not spent $10 million. Yes, we're committed for $10 million, and we stand by our commitment, but you can't misrepresent that to the community, who might believe that all this money is in the bank, because it's not in the bank. And that was an issue that came up at a meeting when your chief executive officer came to our meeting back, 6 or 9 months ago. And I thought the issue was clarified then when I focused the question then. And I think it needs to be revisited. It's a very minor change to your language. It in no way diminishes anything. It just makes it a tad more accurate. Thank you.
Sure thing. We will note that for future reporting updates.
Thank you, Director Shore and Erica. Thank you. Is there any other questions or comments from board members? Seeing no hands go up, we will move on to the next item. New business consideration to approve a 4-month no-cost grant extension for grant 1124, UCR School of Medicine, COVID-19 testing for farm working communities in the Eastern Coachella Valley. Conrado?
Thank you, Madam President. Our wonderful Donna Craig will lead us into this discussion.
Okay, thank you very much. As you can see, they got a late start on the project, and Conrado had actually alluded to the challenges that UCR was having back in his report, his CEO report, earlier on. So this is just it's no cost grant extension, so they can continue the finishing the work and through February 28th, 2021.
Okay, I will open it up first to board members and then turn it over for public comment, and then come back to the board for final questions and comments. Board member Zendo.
I move that we accept the grant extension.
Is there a second?
Matthews will second.
Okay, is there any public comment, Andrea?
There is no public comment.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. I will call for the vote. If there's not, is there any other questions or comment from board members? Okay, then I will call for the vote. Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zendel?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Thank you, our extremely bright Donna Craig.
Thank you.
Okay, next we turn it over to our legal, Jeff, to give us a legislative update.
Thank you, Madam President, and good evening, everybody. It's nice to see that everybody is staying safe. And I would just invite you to your attention to my memo. As you can imagine, the pandemic is, it's pretty much was an upside down year in the legislature. And so I think if you want to take a few minutes, you can look at the craziness that occurred during the last week with COVID having affected the Republicans and all the craziness that occurred at the last minute. I will say that there were about 500 bills passed this year as opposed to normally about 1,500 bills. So it did, they were considerably reduced. With respect to bills that were of interest to the district, SB 758 was the seismic bill, which was sponsored by the California Hospital Association with ACHD in strong support. And if you recall, that would have extended the seismic deadlines from 2030 to 2037 and would have also set up an independent advisory committee which would review the standards, and the hope was is to make the requirements not quite so severe. It kind of was whizzing through, got through the Assembly Health Committee and then over to Appropriations, and the SEIU and CNA kind of raised their head and watered down the bill to the extent to where the author felt like it really wasn't worth pursuing this year. And the hope is that they're going to regroup and come back and hopefully get something done next year. So we'll see. Another bill of interest that didn't make it the final cut was SB 977. And that was the Attorney General bill, which would have given the Attorney General additional powers to review future or deny future leases of healthcare district hospitals, even after the transactions might have been approved by the elected board members. I'm not entirely clear why this bill didn't make it, but it just didn't have enough gas to get through at the end of the session. Next bill was the Rodriguez bill and the PAN bill, and those are the PPE bills. So far, the governor hasn't signed those bills. That would have increased the inventory of the PPE equivalent. I think the interesting thing about both of these bills is they're roughly the same bill, and you would have normally seen that they would have merged the two bills into one bill, but the stubbornness of SEIU and CNA, because they were sponsoring separate bills, is basically this was the result. The governor will probably figure out one of these bills that he's going to pass, but so far last check, we haven't been determined which bill he would sign. The Wood bill was the bill that basically this was the this was basically access to rural care. So I'm not going to go into that one. The Hill bill actually was signed by the governor on the 17th and codifies the executive action. Stating if an employee before July 6 contracted COVID, it would be presumed to have occurred at work. So that's going to be a helpful bill for workers' comp, people that apply for workers' comp. And finally, SB 1983 was a bill that will provide millions of employees who work for smaller businesses with the same 12-week job protection while taking care of a new child or family members. Including grandparents, et cetera. And the threshold in this bill, the significance of this bill was that it normally only applied to companies with 50 or more employees, and now it's been reduced to 5 employees, which will make it apply to the district. And again, the governor has until September 30th to sign or veto any bills on his desk. And that's all I have. Thank you.
I see a hand up from first Donna, since she had it up first, and I'll come back to Director Zendel.
Jeff, I was just wondering if you are going to be tracking SB 855 by Senator Weiner regarding health coverage for mental health or substance use disorders?
Certainly will. We'll make sure that if the governor passes it, it's on or signs his it rather.
Supposed to be on his signature, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of bills. He's got a lot of work to do. So he's trying not to play his hand at this point, but we'll just have to see and follow it. But I will follow it. Thank you, Donna.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Zendel?
Yeah, I just wanted to say a word about AB 899 Wood. This is a bill that allows nurse practitioners to practice more independently than they do now. By the way, I support this. But the doctors in this state are peeing in their pants about this bill. And I have gotten more letters from every physician organization telling me how, the earth will collapse if this passes. So it did pass. The question is, will the governor sign it? But this has the doctors really, really upset. They're being crazy about it. So
I think because it had such support from the unions that there's probably a very good chance, Les, that it'll pass. But thank you for elaborating on it.
And we will excuse your description because you are a medical doctor, okay?
Oh, I should have said urinating instead, sorry.
Okay, Director Rogers.
Yeah, you can say that they're incontinent.
Is there any other question or comments from board members?
I have a comment on SB.
Director Rogers. Yes, Director Rogers.
Thank you. The at the last meeting, I read a letter that I wrote to Assemblyman Garcia in support of this bill, and I think that you all need to look at the disinformation that's going around about that. It's really allows the community to weigh in on whether that a hospital lease to by a district will show community benefit. Many times, district boards, hospitals get together, and there's absolutely no concern about how any lease or sale will benefit the community. So this is really important, and I think we need to follow it.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other questions or comments from board members on the legislative update? Okay, seeing no hands, we'll move on to immediate issues and comments. Is there any issues or comments from board members? Staff?
I've got.
Okay, Director Zendel.
A couple things. First of all, I'd like to see the board get involved in supporting the Ivy project, which is a permanent supportive housing at a old hotel that's being refurbished on Palm Canyon. There's a lot of NIMBY against it in Palm Springs, and so I think it's because it's so important to the whole issue of homelessness that I believe the district should support this as it comes before, particularly the City Council of Palm Springs. And I'd ask to see if there's a consensus from the board to ask the staff to prepare something.
I would be supportive of that. We should have that as an agenda item so that we could take action.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an action, but you could certainly see if there's interest on the board for this.
Well, I would like to send an official letter from the board if there's support for it, so it could be in the record for the city council.
By the way, I'm asking that the board give a consensus to allow staff to write something for us to approve.
Well, okay. I would like to suggest
something if I am allowed to speak.
Yes, you may speak.
Thank you. I would like to suggest that we have a workshop on affordable housing. I think this is a very complex and broad issue, and we will be better served by having a conversation that delves deeper into these issues and how the work that Palm Springs is doing fits into a larger picture. I think that will be a more comprehensive approach for the district to be involved and learning about these issues. I would love to hear your opinion on that. And again, it's going to be promoting a comprehensive, more regional approach than just supporting one project in one city.
Okay. Director Shore.
Dr. Zeno, just a quick question. How many housing units is proposed in this project, please?
You know, Greg Rodriguez can speak to it. I certainly think that we can talk about this on the global issue, but I believe, and Greg can give us the timeline, that the City Council, because they were just funded today by the state, I think $3.8 million or something, the City Council of Palm Springs is going to have to make a decision very quickly. And so, if possible, I'd like the board to go on record. But could we ask Greg to speak and answer Director Shore's question and my timeline question?
Greg, can you answer that question briefly? Because we are kind of running late, but if you could address the questions. Are you still there?
Of course. And yes. Yes. And so the development, it's currently a 100-room hotel right now, and it will be an 85-unit project with the primarily one bedrooms, but some efficiency units as well. I would agree with Les. It would be really positive to have a letter from the district, but I also agree with Conrado on the broader scope of affordable housing. What was nice is actually we were awarded three projects in the county today by the state. One of those is actually in the East Valley at Mountain View Mobile Home Park, where we're going to be doing another 40 units that's going to address some of the dilapidated conditions in the East Valley. So I think this is really an important important issue for the district as well. And that's just kind of a high level. Happy to answer if there's any other questions as well.
The other question was a timeline. When do you need the letter that you would that you're suggesting? Would
yeah. Be thank you, Letty. And just to clarify things, this is actually a county project. We technically do not need city approval, but we are working closely in partnership with them. We actually held about a 2.5-hour, 3-hour meeting last night with the public on this. A little disconcerting on some of the elitism and NIMBYism as Les responded. But this is moving quickly because the funds have to be expended by December 30th due to CARES Act requirements. So if the district could have a letter that we could have on file through the Housing Authority for the city, that would be fantastic.
Very good. Vice President Borja.
I think we should do both. One, because there's urgency behind the Palm Springs work. And I think we should definitely do a meeting, a study session, as Conrado suggests. The city of Coachella in the first half of the month of September deployed a like mobile resource center. And so I've seen it a couple of times driving to work, and there are people helping people. Like, it is a something that has not been, I don't know. It's in the East Valley, it's in the city of Coachella, it's in the right place, right time, right location. I really would like to see a conversation of the district supporting something like that in other communities, supporting that to go around. Like, it is, I don't know what it is, I don't know how the city's getting funding for it, I'm assuming the county. It involves, anyways, I'm very curious to see what that operation is, how we can be a part of it, and how we can help deploy it in other areas. One of the things that COVID is going to do, at least for some Latinos in our community in the East Valley, is it may not put people on the street, but it will increase our already high occupancy rates in our homes by people moving into each other's homes as the courts start opening up and evictions, end of the year, right? But evictions start being put out. So this mobile unit, I think, has potential to serve some of those community members as well. So I'm very curious, and I think Conrado is like on the right track. I think Greg is on the right track, and I definitely do support Director Zendel in a letter to the City of Palm Springs in support.
So let's wrap it up with this then, the consensus.
President DeLauro, Heather has also had her hand raised as well.
Okay, Heather, but make it brief because we want to wrap it up since this is not on the agenda. So I'll give you a quick minute, just like I did Greg.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to offer really quickly, and I know that Greg would be amenable to participating in this as well, that we would be thrilled to be able to do some type of workshop that Conrado suggested around the regional affordable housing plans and the pipeline that exists of projects in the Coachella Valley. So I just wanted to offer that Lifterize's Housing Collaborative Action Network of more than 50 partners would love to participate in this type of workshop, and we would be willing to put something together if it's of interest to the district board.
Thank you, Heather. Okay.
So do we have a consensus that we write a letter in support of the county and Palm Springs?
Consensus that we want to put it on the agenda for the very next meeting that we have, and if necessary, in terms of timing, I think Greg said that the sooner the better. If I could just entrust staff to put it together for either the next meeting or have a special meeting, but agendize it, and I think there's consensus that we want to do both the letter and the workshop, and we'll leave that up to you. And I see a hand from Director Rogers. Director Zendel, I didn't want to cut you off. Did you finish your thought?
No, I think one is a short-term issue and one is a long-term issue. And again, I agree with the long-term issue, but I want to make sure that we get a letter. Now, if the staff writes a letter, a letter can be approved by the board, you know, by a Senate. It doesn't necessarily have to go to a public meeting, does it?
I think the point for the letter for tonight's discussion is simply, does any board member have an objection to for Letitia to send a letter in support? That's really only the question. Is there anybody has an objection? If there's no objection, then for all practical purposes on that issue, I think you don't have to agendize it. You don't have to make a big deal. It's just whether or not anybody has an objection.
Okay, so I'm going to actually leave that thought there because I have a comment to make on that, but I'm going to turn to Director Rogers to give her an opportunity to speak if it has to do with this topic as well.
Yes, I was going to give my expert legal advice and say you don't need to go to a vote. You can just ask for consensus.
Great, now we have two attorneys on the consensus. Good, I'm glad we got it. But so that is, I think, clear, Conrado? Is that clear on to do a letter by consensus from the board? Yes. And then to schedule a workshop that you have interest from Greg and from Heather, and I'm sure others, but there'll be an informative workshop, comprehensive and informative for the board because housing is a very important topic. Okay, so.
Thank you.
Immediate issues having to do with this issue about a letter and kind of tied into the legal, the legislative update. We had two letters of support that came up in discussion in the last meeting. So I would like for us to have a policy on what do we do when we have an issue that pertains to the district. What are the options? And when is it appropriate for the CEO to act? When is it appropriate for the board to act as a whole? Who has signing authority? Does it have to be a special meeting? Does it just by consensus? Can it be whatever? But let's have a policy so that we have something in the books and we can adhere to that instead of having to change and having discussion all the time. Is that okay? So I'll leave it up to our legal and our CEO to put that together for our policy committee to review and to come back with a recommendation to the board.
Great.
Okay. So is there any other questions? I see a hand from Director Zendel.
Yeah, I want to remind everybody to get a flu shot. Director Shore, Director Rogers, and I have to get the senior shot, which hurts a lot more than the other one, by the way. but it'll last longer. On the other hand, if it's not available, get the regular one. Don't postpone getting it because the senior one's not available.
I got a senior shot and a lollipop.
I didn't know there was a difference, but okay.
Director Zendo, is that a joke or are there two different flu shots? Vaccine.
No.
You're on mute.
There are two different vaccines. One is a high dose vaccine that is for people who are elderly, like Director Shore, Rogers, and myself, and those who are that are immunocompromised. It's
just because I had a birthday yesterday, there's no need to be insulting or complimentary, whichever you choose.
Could you define elderly?
Right. I would consider you guys seniors, not elders. Elders 90 plus.
Anyway, the reason is that our elderly immune systems take a little more oomph to get stimulated, and that's why it's recommended. On the other hand, and the high-dose senior vaccine is in really very short supply. So it's more important that you get a flu vaccine of any kind than you hold off for the senior one.
Thank you for that information. That must be, Carol said that it was a pain-free shot, so I'm not sure which one she was referring to, but the one I got, it was a little poke, so it wasn't too bad. Okay, so I'm going to call for an adjournment, but I do want to adjourn in memory of our Supreme Court Justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Memory of her great life, and appreciate everything she did, and she will be missed. And if it's okay with you, we will move into our foundation meeting. Does anybody need a break? Okay. Carol, you want to go on your 2-minute break?
Let's go.
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Mitz.
I'm sorry?
Time it, 2 minutes.
A 2-minute break, okay. It's 7:48. We'll start at 7:50.
Now we have to do meeting number two. Meeting number two is yet to come. And it'll be short. Now I'm watching the microphone.
Letty, how's your niece doing?
She is doing fantastic. Things are going well.
I think you need to keep us up to date on where she's going. She's an impressive kid. Impressive kid.
She's hoping for USC. We'll see if that happens or not.
Wall Street Journal put USC as the number 6 school in the country.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like that? I taught there for 22 years part-time.
Oh.
Just for kicks.
Well, she never did. She was never on the curling team. Is that what it was? So she won't get in on that.
That's good. She'll have a great experience there. It's a fine school.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a fine school.
Okay, so it looks like we have our directors back. Only our staff are lagging behind. Okay, there you go.
Dr. Sandell, I want you to know you're the first person to ever call me elderly.
He can get away with a lot of things because he's a medical doctor. He could say that he's using his medical opinion. Okay, so I think we are back. I see our CEO is back. So we will call the meeting to order at 7:51. Okay, roll call. Andrea.
President DeLara.
Here.
Vice President Borja.
Here.
Director Matthews.
Here.
Director Rogers. Director Rogers.
Here.
Director Perez-Gil, who was out. Director Zeno. Here.
I'm here.
Director Shore.
Here.
Okay, very good. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I so move.
We have a first by Director Shore, second by Director Rogers, and roll call, Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zendel?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes, passes. Public comment, is there any member of the public that would like to call to talk on an item that is not on the agenda? There's a limit of 3 minutes. Andrea, is there any member of the public?
There is no public comment.
Okay, very good. We will move to the consent agenda, which includes the board minutes and financials. Is there a motion to approve?
I motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Vice President Borja, a second by Director Rogers, and all those in favor, starting with Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zendel?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
Okay, and I vote yes. Okay, the next is there any public comment? I should have asked for, is there any public comment on consent agenda? No?
Okay. No public comment, no.
Okay, very good. The next item is the Desert Healthcare Foundation CEO report. The first one is an information item, environmental health in the Eastern Coachella Valley, emergency response communication plan update. I'll turn it over to our CEO.
Thank you, Madam President. On page 17, you will have this report that the staff has written on what is happening with the work that number one, Concord Inc. is doing on the air quality emergency communication plan. They are in the final stages of drafting a briefing paper with information gathered from various meetings and research that they have completed. And this briefing paper will include the Eastern Coachella Valley environmental justice issues, the chronology of the fires that have taken place in thermal, tribal land use and jurisdiction problems, the breakdown in communication and response, and an initial list of key stakeholders, entities, and potential representatives. The next steps will be to convene a series of 6 collaborative meetings with key stakeholders, with the objectives of establishing a clear problem statement and improving communication among agencies and other collaborative members. So that is the first part of that report. The second part of the report is related to the work that the Public Health Institute is doing, and that relates to data. They have been mining some data, and we will be receiving some of the analysis of the impact on the health of our residents related to the poor environmental conditions that they're exposed to in Eastern Coachella Valley.
So that is the report. Any questions on that?
Board members, do you have any questions or comments? If you could raise your hand, please. Yeah, I see two hands, starting with Director Zendel.
This is a kind of a long-range project, I guess. And I, Conrado, I wonder if you could just give us an idea of whether you see success down the line. It's a very complicated thing involving so many different entities. And obviously a lot of work's being done, but are you optimistic that something positive will come out of this?
We are optimistic that something positive will come out of this. At least we will have a very clear understanding of who is responsible for what. One of the greatest challenges that we have had in the past is that there was no clear understanding of who were the first responders, and then when was county or federal government or state responsible to hand over or to take over on an emergency situation. And I think what makes us more optimistic about this issue is that we are uncovering some of the policy issues that will be raised as recommendations to ensure that we are preventing these issues from happening in the future. Because we can, through public policy and through enforcement of those policies, prevent these illegal fires from happening and from affecting our communities.
That's great. Thank you.
Vice President Borja?
Hi, Conrado and staff. I have a question on page... I have a question on page 18. The first one is about goal number one, regarding like asthma testing. Has that happened or is it going to happen?
It's going to happen.
Okay. And it will be testing, not just asking people, do you have asthma or have you ever had an attack?
No, it will be a real survey. Not just have you had asthma. I think it's to corroborate that they have had asthma.
Thank you. And then on point number four of this page, I see that they are looking into air monitoring. Just for your information, their information, there are air quality monitors set up around the Salton Sea. I believe there's one on Torres Martinez tribal land. Yes. They don't have that information. They should definitely reach out to Ryan St. Clair at Loma Linda University. He's been the person that's been working on, he's probably the one of the best informed people around the East Valley on the air monitoring stations. He has been like a great advocate for them.
Yes.
Any other questions or comments from board members on this report, on this agenda item? I see no hands going up. Thank you, Conrado, for that update.
Excuse me, President DeLauro, we have a public comment. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, can you hear me okay? Oh, Greg?
Yeah, it's Greg, of course. I just want to emphasize, I think this is a great move by the district, and we got some really good encouraging report yesterday on the county task force that's dealing with the fires and illegal dumping. That is proving a real success. So I think this is a very complementary position to that. And to Conrado's point about the need for entities to be involved in this on a holistic level, and to Les's point as well, we're seeing that come to fruition. So I think this is a really good move by the district. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just have one comment that I think this report will be very useful when it's completed, because the work that needs to be done that will be following the report, it's going to require funding, a lot more funding outside of the area. And a lot of times that kind of funding is tied to data. And this kind of report will be very useful to be added. The fact that there are policies in place, that's another corroboration for why this area needs to be thought of or be considered for for funding. So thank you, Conrado. The next item is the Oasis Mobile Home Park water arsenic challenges.
Yes, and on page 19, we have a report that the staff put together on issues that are affecting Oasis Mobile Home Park. The primary focus was the drinking water issues. As you may have heard on the news, there have been a new attempt by the EPA to exercise some control over what is happening at Oasis Mobile Home Park. The levels of arsenic in the water are extremely, extremely high. And our community members that live in that park are bathing, cooking, drinking that water. In the past, we were approached by the Riverside Community Housing Corporation, and we provided a small grant that helped provide water at the last emergency. That was a few months ago. In the meantime, the owner of that mobile home park was going to dig a new well that would provide cleaner water. That project started. For a few months, we were providing or helping finance the purchase of clean water to that community. Finally, that new well started providing water to the community. And then they had a wonderful idea of blending the water from the new well with the old well. And that's when they had the same issue. Now the EPA is using a stronger language. They are applying a larger sum of fines daily. And they have demanded that the owners of that park to provide a response that will lay out what's the plan to address these issues for once. And the EPA will have to review and approve that plan. We know that the challenges that this community is facing are very serious, and there are other communities that are in similar situation. I believe that due to the complexity of the project, and also that this is a very important community in our district. These are mostly farm workers. These are the people that are keeping food on our table, that we should be learning more and exploring how we can work together with other special districts, with the county, and with many nonprofit organizations that are so involved in improving the quality of life of these residents, to find a long-lasting solution to the challenges that are affecting these communities.
Thank you. Is there any questions or comments from board members? If you could please raise your hand to be recognized. I don't see any hands. Is there any public comment on this one, Andrea?
No public comment.
Okay, I do have a comment on this, Conrado. When we talked about this item, you had mentioned to me, I think it was Vice President Borja who asked about the Pueblo Unido involvement and the point of use systems that they had, that there was a belief that we both thought that some funding was going towards that. And then when you and I talked, you mentioned that some of the funding could be used for that. It was not necessarily restricted to that, but it could be used, but that there was some concern about whether there was cooperation from the park owner to allow the point of use products or the instrument. And you know that I continued to think about that after we talked, because it is a little bit frustrating that there's possibly, I don't know how effective they are, but there's a possible interim solution to improving the quality of water. And if the park owner is not being supportive of it, I think that that is unconscionable, but also it's something that should be pressured, that he be more cooperative, so that there should be a position from this board to encourage Pueblo Unido to make a greater effort to make those systems available for the residents there, and to make that known through the county, so that we approach it as a partnership, that we really are pushing for those filtration systems to be a possible interim solution, because this is not gonna be a 30-day response. This is gonna be for years until there's a permanent solution. But if we could kind of come up with some kind of a strategy on really pushing for those filtration systems to find out if they're effective, and if they are, that we do as much as we can in partnership with other entities, whether it's the county or EPA or whoever it takes, but to really put some pressure on supporting and making something happen with those, making those available. So those are that's my comments. So if you could please let us know.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that statement, President De Lara. One of the points that we highlight in our report is that there are some infrastructure projects that are happening in that area. But if you consider that these are multi-million dollar projects, that it will require months to just complete the engineering phase to envision how these extensions of water or main pipelines are going to be drawn and digged and connected to the area. And then it will take 5 to 7 years to complete those projects. And then it will require making connections, water connections, to each one of those mobile homes. It is seriously very concerning, and I agree that we need to look at what solutions can be easily implemented in a short period of time, and that can be an interim solution until those infrastructure projects are completed.
Thank you. I totally agree with that sentiment, and I think that the filtration systems is someplace that we should explore. So thank you for that. And I see a hand, Vice President Borja.
Just for the knowledge of my colleagues on the board, there is a BMW racetrack that also has housing out there who does not have the same water issues as our families who are living in mobile home parks. We have a high school, an elementary school, two elementary schools, a middle school. They also do not have the same issues around water as our mobile home park residents do. And farmers, there is a lot of agriculture and a lot of farmers who get water from the same entity that is trying to connect to residents in 2020, who also do not have the same levels of arsenic coming to them as our residents do in their water systems. So just for the benefit of your information, right, there are actually waterways in the Oasis area, in the thermal area today, that do not have the same levels of arsenic.
Yes, it is. It is very frustrating and very, very concerning for the families that have to endure the kind of conditions that they are living on a day-to-day basis, not knowing how this is going to impact their health on a long-term basis. So yes. Okay, thank you, Conrado, for your report. The program committee, Vice President Borja, if you have anything to start with, but on this, you have any comments before we go through each of the items?
No, I don't have any comments that stand out at this moment.
So I will ask if there's any questions on the draft minutes and information item. Are there any questions or comments from board members? Vice President, President Borja? Okay, seeing no hands go up. Grant payment schedule, is there any questions or comments? I see a hand. Director Rogers?
Somewhere in my notes, I had a correction to the minutes.
Okay, sorry.
I had a correction to the minutes somewhere that said that Director Rogers and seconded the same motion. I'll get back to
So there's a couple of corrections to the minutes. If Director Rogers can contact Andrea to make sure those corrections are made. That's an information item. The next information item is advancing the district's role in addressing the healthcare needs of Black communities in the Coachella Valley, strategic focus area, healthcare infrastructure and services. A is request for proposals, access to healthcare strategies, 500,000. Our CEO.
Thank you, Madam President. We are in the final stages of completing the RFP. And also I want to report that we're very close to obtaining an additional contribution to the fund for $75,000. So that will make our RFP even more attractive to a healthcare organization to bring a proposal to deliver healthcare in that community.
Thank you, Conrado. Congratulations on such a great work in reaching out to other potential partners and for making a compelling case. Are there any questions or comments from directors on the item A? I see no hands go up. So item B is expanding racial diversity in the health profession workforce, 100,000, our CEO.
Yes, and in this, similarly, we have had conversation with One Future Coachella Valley. I believe we reported this, but I'm not sure if it was at the meeting or it was at the program committee. So it's also advancing. We will bring forward a proposal once we receive it to explain what the next steps will be. But we're looking at the universe of Black students that are participating in a health career and how we can support them in their work or in their education.
Very good. Thank you, Conrado. Questions or comments from board members on this item? I see no hands go up, so we will move on to the next item. Finance, Legal, Administration, and Real Estate Committee. That is draft minutes. Is there any questions of our board chair on this information item? I see no hands go up. So we'll move on to the next item, the Homelessness Initiative. Starting off with the Coachella Valley Association of Governments Homelessness Committee, Coachella Valley Homeless Engagement and Action Response Team, also known as CV Heart, subcommittee updates. Our CEO?
Yes, the subcommittee has been recommending the change in how the CV Housing First program is going to be implemented. Traditionally, since 2017, this has been a project that was outsourced through Path of Life, and there have been many challenges in the implementation of CV Housing First. CVAG has proposed, actually, we had many months of conversations trying to analyze and understand what would be the best pathway to ensure the success of CV Housing First. The recommendation from the subcommittee was to adopt an in-house model and transition from the outsourced model to an in-house model. This was recommended. It was presented at the September 16 CVAC Homelessness Committee meeting. It was then voted 8-2 to bring that recommendation for approval at the executive committee. The executive committee met last night and they did pass this motion. So CV Housing First will be now a program in-house for CVAC.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I hadn't heard that. That's really good that they approved that. And I will turn it over to board members for questions and comments, starting with Director Zendel.
Yeah, who's going to run it in CVAC?
Tom is going to be the person, not Tom Kirk, the other Tom.
Fox.
Tom Cox, he will be the person responsible for that, and they will hire additional staff to run the program.
Great.
Okay, Vice President Borja.
I have a request that whenever we are in this ad hoc committee space, we do consider the inclusion of the cities who actually have shelters that provide services. So in your list of who's involved, I do not see anyone from the city of Indio, and I do not see anyone from, I mean, I know Greg is part of MECA, but like the Galilee Center, I'm sure they have best practices, what works, what doesn't work. And they also have, you know, their own city responsibilities to take care of our neighbors and our residents. So I would just recommend and to I would just ask that whenever the board sits on these, in these locations, that we like really take to heart the One Coachella Valley and include our neighbors further down east.
I think it was CVAC that put together that ad hoc committee, and they put, Greg, can you speak on how that was decided on who would serve on this committee?
I can, and thank you, and thank you for the question, Director Borja. So obviously, because of the Brown Act, you're limited on the number of members who can participate. And with that being said, however, though, is within the discussions through the subcommittee, we talked about the providers in the East Valley, and that include Galilee Center. As my role, again, as a collaborative director, I am looking at this at the 30,000 foot view from the valley as a whole. And so all of those considerations are brought into effect on what any kind of changes in programming affects that. And more importantly, how those partner agencies play into the overall goal of reducing homelessness in the valley.
For your edification, right, with CARES Act money that the city of Indio received, they chose not to do a rent moratorium for their residents. Instead, they chose to give money to the shelters. So again, right, they really do play a very substantive role in supporting our populations out here.
Yeah, exactly. And again, to your point, Director Borja, is not even just in the subcommittee, but in, you know, when it was brought to the CVAG Homelessness Committee, obviously there's Indio representatives and Coachella representatives. And then the supervisor is representative of the unincorporated areas. Additionally, we had an additional meeting the next day after the CVAG Homeless Committee with city managers from all cities. And then, of course, last night was the executive committee where all mayors from every city. So I really want to emphasize the point that, you know, the East Valley and Indio specifically was involved in the conversations.
Thank you, Greg, for addressing that comment from our board
President
member.
Laura, we have one more comment.
Okay, I see a hand up from our Director Zendel, and then I'll open it up to the other question. First, Director Zendel.
Linda Evans has a comment. I'd like to hear her comment first.
Okay. Andrea, is that who you wanted to call on next?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Linda? Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. I just wanted to add that I did make the motion last night to shift the Housing First component from Path of Life into CVAG. However, that motion was to have a 12-month transition So our desire was to take the program to the next level, although needing to exit the Path of Life relationship and then better understand with our own local resources what our Coachella Valley needs. And so therefore, Tom Cox, who has experience, Libby also, and of course we have Greg on board, will have the allowance to hire three individuals, and we're exploring if they are going to be 12-month kind of at-will individuals versus adding to the CVAG chassis forever and ever. And this will allow that team time to then explore, you know, any service gaps, and then of course continue to partner with our existing resources like the Rescue Mission and Martha's and Galilee and all of the others that have played a role in finding and taking homeless people off the streets into a more permanent housing element. So Director Zendel, yes, it was an in-house discussion and transition, but the goal is that it is truly a temporary transition, unless sometime over the course of the next 12 months, we find that this is working better than expected. And then of course the executive committee would reconsider based on recommendations from both the CV Heart subcommittee, which I serve on as part of Desert Care Network, and the Health Source part, and then the homelessness committee through the executive. So hopefully that clarifies things. It was a 10-2 vote. Of course, Indian Wells and Rancho Mirage voted no. Indian Wells financially supports both Martha's and CV Rescue Mission, and Rancho Mirage made a commitment to continue to support financially the housing unit component. They just were not supportive of the temporary in-house transition, but continued to say they would continue to fund the program.
Thank you, Linda, for that information. Director Zendel?
So actually, Mayor Evans, you were responding to Vice President Borja's comment, but I want to actually add on to Vice President Borja's comment. This actually is only talking about CV housing first. And I think we need to remember that one of the recommendations that was made 3 years ago by our consultant is that there needs to be an umbrella looking at all of the different housing homelessness issues, which of course involves low-income housing too, under one umbrella. And as I brought up at the last meeting, we now have a permanent supportive housing issue in Palm Springs. And I really would like to go back to who is like looking at the overall structure of how we deal with homelessness in the Coachella Valley, not just with Housing First, but all these other projects, and in addition to our current shelters in the East Valley and other programs that are going on in the cities, I still don't get a sense that there is a kind of umbrella organization looking at it. I know that CBAG is supposed to have that umbrella organization, but at least I don't get a sense of how it's doing it. So maybe that might be a future study session or a long agenda item for the board to hear about how it all comes together.
Thank you, Director Zendel.
If I can just add to that real quickly, I defer to Greg because Greg is part of the umbrella and he's holding the stick. And it is beyond CV Housing First, but Greg, if you'd like to continue, I'll go ahead and mute. But all good points, and definitely this is how we evolve.
Yeah. And good question, Les. And, you know, I completed a report at the end of last year, submitted that in January, then COVID hit. But with that being said, though, that has not stopped my efforts in the overall collaborative effort. And what you'll be seeing, Les, and the other board members, is in the next 2 months, a complete rollout, actually, of the initial structure, the organizational chart, of that umbrella organization to you speak of, Les. So just so you know, that has not been lost and is being developed. What actually this whole move to the change in the CV Housing First program has, I'll say throw a wrench, but I don't mean it that way. It's really having me analyze how programming fits in, because in the spring of this year, the CVAG Homelessness Committee, as well as the Executive Committee, approved the recommendation that I did in my report for adopting a hybrid continuum of care operation through CVAG in conjunction with the county. And so that's where I've been developing that structural organization over the last couple of months. And again, you will see the fruition of that come to bear over the next couple of months.
And even the next agenda item, the cooling centers, is all part of this whole thing.
Exactly.
It involves more than the homeless. I just want to make one final point. What I worry about is every June, as it gets hot, we seem to start over again of how we're going to do this. And there needs to be kind of a comprehensive plan that is multi-year and doesn't sort of like, oh, where are we going to get the funds this year?
I'll address that in the next agenda item.
Very good. Is there any other questions or comments from board members on this agenda item? I don't see any hands go up, so we will move on to the next one, which is a summer cooling centers update. Conrado?
Yes, Madam President, this is a very brief report that we put together to remind our board members about where we have cooling centers. We, as a reminder, there are three that are overnight cooling centers, and that we are supporting those cooling centers paying their utilities as requested by Greg Rodriguez. And if you have any questions about this brief report, please ask the staff.
Your board members, do you have any questions or comments? If you could please raise your hand. I will start with Director Shore.
I have two rather mechanical questions. Can I assume that in the overnight facilities, the sleeping unit is a foldable cot that's portable that can be moved to any location, similar to what you'd see in an emergency evacuation area, or is it more substantial than that? That's question number one.
Right.
I believe they're more substantial than that. They're stackable units.
Stackable units. Okay, but they're clearly portable units.
Yes.
My other question is this, a little more strategic. Has any consideration been given to doing a survey in April or May of vacant big box stores or malls that are not actively operational so that you have a huge, huge center located in one place as opposed to not in any way to diminish these smaller locations, but that you have, in essence, a capacity limited only by the number of stackable beds?
So, defer that question to Greg.
Of course you would, Colonel.
Sorry, so, Greg.
No, that's okay. Two issues here. So in concept, that's a great idea. In reality, when it comes to cost, we would have to lease those facilities. I will tell you that each center right now is a $30,000 a month operation, and that is no capital cost whatsoever outside of the utility cost that the district covers, and that's above the $30,000 a month cost. What I will also say is that the demand we have seen is not that large, especially since we've divided it amongst the three cities. Even if you had one central large location, homeless individuals do not want to live the city within which they are. This also brings up a larger dialogue, and while these cooling centers have been very effective, I'm gonna be honest with you. They are enabling environments because, especially Palm Springs, is a classic example. What we're seeing is that the clients that visit Well in the Desert during the day and then do the Palm Springs United Methodist Church at night, we have tried to get them into permanent housing, into supportive services, and there's not support for that. And some of the same case in Cathedral City and Desert Hot Springs as well. Yes, this actually summer has been far more productive in at least getting people into CVR programming than it was last year. But You know, you have to weigh the cost-benefit analysis of this. If we can run a Housing First program that houses literally about 50 people a year, and that sounds like a small number, but it's not, because we're actually doing additional work with rapid resolution and diversion. But for $1 million or $800,000 under the new projected budget, where it would cost $1.2 million just to have people sleep between 5 p.m. and 7 a.m. So you really have to look at the cost-benefit analysis on that.
Well, I'll accept your answer for now, but I'd like to discuss it with you further going forward. Thank you.
Sure.
Are there any other board members with questions or comments?
I'm sorry, President Dallara, if I could add on, I just want to, again, I want to thank the healthcare district for stepping up again this year on the utility assistance. I want to address Director Zendel's point, and trust me, I'm the one that gets confronted the month or 2 months before everybody wants these open. And luckily again, and you know, it was really only due to COVID this year that we were able to secure the county funding for these three cooling centers overnight. I've had the ask over the last few weeks to extend this for at least another month. Again, we've had some success in getting people into permanent housing through this, but also as we are seeing better numbers in the COVID numbers coming through, another month would help in protecting this vulnerable population. I had thought I was going to be able to secure additional county resources through COVID or through CARES funding, excuse me, that I found out yesterday was not going to happen. I know it's not an action item on the agenda, but would ask if it is possible for an emergency item for a $90,000 allocation to continue these 30-day operations through October 31st, with the intent that there would be intense case management on the clients, not only through CVRM, but through the CVAG/Path of Life and county resources to get these people to get these individuals into permanent housing. And if it doesn't happen, we are already prepared to shut these down on September 30th, as was originally done. So.
Okay, so does that meet the criteria for an emergency item, Jeff?
No.
Okay. So sorry, Craig, but if we could have that, if you could talk to Conrado about that, see if there's some other way of handling that. Maybe a special meeting?
Yeah, and I did have a conversation with Conrado this morning, and I appreciate it. And so I will pursue that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, any more preguntas or comentarios from our board members? Questions or comments from our board members? Okay, so I switch over to Spanish at after 8:30. So
nada.
Okay, so then there being no more questions or comments, then I will adjourn the meeting at 8:33. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.